You're listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
Having a hard time finding your favorite show on shortwave or satellite? The Christian Media Newspaper now provides program guides to all the top Christian, patriot, and alternative radio programs. Four times a year, they print an updated shortwave and satellite program guide. Christian Media is $20 per year and includes news and interviews on Christian books, video, music, and broadcasting. Subscribe now and receive a free Christian music compact disc with your paid order. To subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. Once again, to subscribe to Christian Media or receive more information, call 520-333-4578. That's 520-333-4578. Call now.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a nonprofit community service.
The Federal Reserve, it's private. They own it. It's neither federal nor a reserve. The cash is made that fiat funny money stuff you call dollars for 2 pennies. They lend it back to us at full face value. They charge you interest, you get the debt. They get the interest. They get the gold, you get the cash.
A new world order. This is a big idea.
Well, I think I've got that squared away. What it was, as I have a studio tape here rolling, recording the broadcast, because it's always a good idea to do that, and many people want copies. When I activate one of these other pieces of equipment, it causes the recorder somehow to fast forward. So there must be some kind of a little electronic transmission here that I don't know anything about that's causing that to happen. And so I've got to track that down and figure out how to stop it. Make sure you've got pen and paper. As always, ladies and gentlemen, I'll give you a whole bunch of stuff. And some of it's going to really, really shake you up. Some of it's going to make you happy, like this first one that I'm going to give you. If you're watching C-SPAN 2, on June the 4th, 1997, the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Louis Free, buried the hatchet against militias while testifying before the Senate Subcommittee on Terrorism. He said, quote, "We worked very hard to try to evaluate and analyze the activity of the militias. Most of the militia organizations throughout the country are not, in our view, threatening or dangerous," end quote. Mr. Free went on to explain that the instances with the Republic of Texas, the Freeman, and Oklahoma City were not representative of what the county sheriffs around the nation were feeding back to the FBI concerning militia behavior and activities. And in a previous press release, the FBI had stated emphatically that the Oklahoma City bombing was not connected to any militia and there was no militia conspiracy. The Freemen were not militia. They were something else altogether, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, the Republic of Texas is just a bunch of lunatics. And I've got to tell you, I've fully investigated that movement, and they are. They're stark raving mad. Those people went off the deep end a long time ago. Almost everything that they've told the public or put out as documentation has been false, phony, wrong. They have no approval by the World Court or any of the stuff that they've been telling everybody that they have. It's just not true. This next one. How many of you have ever really examined what you call money? The Federal Reserve notes that you carry around in your pocket. If you look on any one of them, it says, quote, Federal Reserve note, end quote. And it says $1, $2, $5, $10, $20, $50, $100, and went up from there to a certain limit. But not too long ago, and we ran a big article on this in Veritas, front page article, as a matter of fact, showing how money started out being real and progressed over the years to be changed into worthless, counterfeit, nothing paper. See, not too many years ago, the same paper bore the words, quote, payable to the bearer on demand, end quote. So these notes apparently at some point ceased to be payable on demand, and yet they are still notes and circulate as money, at least as long as you believe that it's money. It's really not. It's just a piece of paper. Now, if you don't understand that, take a $1 bill and a $100 bill, put them down on your kitchen table, and tell me the difference between the two. I defy you. You can't. And if there's no difference between a $1 bill and a $100 bill, ladies and gentlemen, then you've been defrauded, you've been fooled, you've been lied to, you've been deceived, and you're being manipulated every time you use it. It's the truth. It's causing us to lose literally everything we own, not to mention our freedoms and our country. That's just part of it, but it's a major part. What is the significance of these following statements, ladies and gentlemen? See, if you don't believe me, then what does this mean? In Don E. Williams Company versus the Commissioner of Internal Revenue, 429 United States Supreme Court, 569, 1997, the court ruled, and I quote, notes cannot pay debt, debt cannot pay debt, end quote. The Supreme Court confirmed what I've been telling you for years. If you can't pay debt with a note, and you can't pay debt with debt, which is what a note is, and if the note that you're trying to pay it with isn't even really a note, because it doesn't redeem anything, you can't call it for anything, then what have you got in your pocket? As I've tried to explain to you over the years, that's why you have, instead of a patent title to your property, you have a warrant deed. Or instead of a patent title to your automobile, you have a certificate of title. Both of which just signify that a title exists, but you don't have it because you're not really the owner. You don't own it because you never paid for it. Somewhere along the line, somebody has to pay for it, and you didn't do it. It really belongs to the state. And someday the state, when socialism gains complete power and pulls up that blindfold and lets everybody see what's really going on, you won't be able to own anything. You'll be able to lease it maybe for a few years or borrow it or rent it, but you will not be able to own it, because that's the nature of socialism, communism. That's who's in charge right now. And the White House is one of the biggest lying, deceiving, communist, Marxist, socialist that probably ever lived. William Jefferson Clinton. Oh, boy. He likes to say that his party is the Jefferson Party. The truth is, Jefferson was a Republican, if you'll study your history. And Jefferson warned us against people like William Jefferson Clinton. Just read what he wrote. He was clear about it. And here's the second one. This was New York versus New York County, 7 Wall 26, 19 LER 60. Quote, any note which is intended to circulate as money, but which is not currently payable on demand, would be exempt from taxation, end quote. And I read you that case site wrong. Let me correct it, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Bank of New York versus New York County, 7 Wall 26, 19 L period, capital ER 60. How about that? That ought to keep some of you busy for just a little while, don't you think? This is from the Executive Intelligence Review, the Washington Insider, Volume 6, Number 24, June 12, 1997. The McVeigh trial demonstrates, quote, there is very little justice in the United States, end quote. You see, I'm not the only person out here who understands what's going on. The Executive Intelligence Review, Washington Insider. On June 2nd, the federal jury in Denver that was deliberating on the April 1995 Oklahoma City bombing case found the first defendant, Timothy McVeigh, guilty of murder and conspiracy. Beginning June 3rd, the same jury began to hear evidence and information upon which they will decide whether McVeigh should be executed. And folks have to tell you that today the defense rested, and it will probably go to the jury sometime this afternoon or tomorrow. The crucial question is, back to the article, the crucial question is, will defense attorneys be able to present some of the evidence that was not presented at the main trial, showing that McVeigh could not have been the mastermind of the bombing and pointing towards a wider conspiracy? Particularly ironical in view of McVeigh's being convicted of conspiracy is that federal judge Richard Mash put severe limitations on the defense's right to present evidence that would point to McVeigh's being part of a wider conspiracy, declaring that defense claims to this effect were irrelevant and therefore inadmissible. Mash blocked lawyer Stephen Jones from the kind of broad-based discovery that he had requested, respecting data in U.S. government files on international terrorist groups. McVeigh's lawyers were not in a position to effectively exploit the issue of FBI mistakes in handling vital forensic evidence. As we reported shortly after the bombing, neither McVeigh nor his co-defendant Terry Nichols, nor anyone they were known to have been in touch with in the Army and afterwards, had the engineering and demolition skills to create a truck bomb capable of leveling the Mura building. Even if, as some have contended, the building was blown up by the truck bomb, plus other shaped charges planted inside the building itself, the conclusion remains that McVeigh and Nichols could not have done it alone. These are vital issues that go beyond the question of whether or not McVeigh was involved in the plot in some way. There are some significant leads that never came up at the trial, but which are known to both the government and the defense. These include the mysterious trips that Terry Nichols made to the Philippines in the year preceding the bombing. There are leads suggesting that Nichols may have had links to the Abu Sayyaf group, an Afghanzi terrorist apparatus operating in the Philippines, with ties to terrorist bankroller Osama bin Laden. There are also indications that McVeigh has been linked to a Christian Identity Church, British Israelite compound at Elohim City. Boy, I barely got through that and turned down the pot before I just let out one of the biggest sneezes I've ever had in my life. And I mean, just barely made it. If I'd have sneezed into this microphone, it would have destroyed the microphone, ladies and gentlemen. So that's what that little pause was all about. I continue with the article. Oklahoma, which is part of what might be described as the neo... Well, let me back up here. I got out of the sentence. There are also indications that McVeigh has been linked to a Christian Identity Church, British Israelite compound at Elohim City, Oklahoma, the which is part of what might be described as the Neo-Nazi International. He placed a phone call to the compound in the days before the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, I got to have an aside here. I really object to this word compound. Anybody that the press or anybody who's writing nowadays doesn't like, all of a sudden their home becomes a compound, or their city becomes a compound. In the case of the Freeman, it was their farm. All of a sudden, their farm was a compound. In Waco, their church and their home was a compound. And that's just not right. It is part of the propagandizing and demonizing of people. I don't know if these Elohim City people were involved. I tend to think that some of them were, based upon the evidence that the intelligence service has collected. But I would never call their home a compound. It isn't right. And I don't think you should either, and I don't think people who wrote this should either. But I'm going to read it just like it's written, because I don't want to be accused of taking anything out of context, which I never do. You all know that. Attorney Jones sent investigators to London last year to pursue leads linking members of a right-wing paramilitary group, Forced Eight, to bomb components believed to have been used in the Oklahoma bombing. At the time, several British newspapers reported that there were a number of British links to the Oklahoma bombing. This angle was reportedly high on Jones's list of investigative leads. Additionally, the British establishment's poison pen team of Lord William Rees-Mogg and Ambrose Evans Pritchard were running around in the period leading up to the bombing, putting out advanced propaganda aimed at creating rage and paranoia among the militia groups to which McVeigh was not associated. Interviewed June 3rd, Lyndon LaRouche said that what happened at the McVeigh trial in Denver was, quote, not a real trial, end quote, but rather a showboat. It demonstrated that there is very little justice in the United States. You had so many restrictions, limitations on the trial, on the evidence, that the truth didn't come out. Everything indicates that McVeigh and those people did not have the capability of running that operation. Why don't we want to get the people who actually did it? Don't we want truth anymore? Don't we care about justice anymore? We just want to take out the nearest guy we can say we think he did it, and therefore let's hang him, whether or not he's guilty, who may be peripheral or not to the case. This injustice, this stink of corruption, has disaffected Americans to such a degree that we are becoming vulnerable to some foul ball coming in and using disaffected people to create a cover for his running terrorism against the United States. End quote. That's the end of that. It is obvious, ladies and gentlemen, that while Timothy McVeigh may have been a part of the bombing of the Alfred P. Neuer Federal Building, he had neither the knowledge or the expertise, nor the experience, nor had he ever been in contact with anybody who ever had to blow up that building in the manner that it was blown up. And his trial was a farce. It's like the old Soviet Union trials, where the prosecutor and the judge tell the defense what they're going to say. And so it's just a show for the public. And then when it's over, they hang the guy, whether he did it or not, and go on about their business. That's what's happening. Anatoly Golitsyn was one of the highest-ranking defectors from the Soviet Union to the United States. He wrote a book, New Lies for Old. It's called New Lies for Old. That book is a classic. Even though the Soviet analysts knew what he had to say decades before, and Golitsyn has a new book out, and it's also a classic and a must-read, and I've talked about it before on this broadcast, but if you've not read the old book, New Lies for Old, get it or visit a library and read it, and I'm going to give you the Barnes & Noble catalog number about Russia's dirty little secret to take over the world, and it's not just Russia's secret. Read The Perestroika Deception by Anatoly Golitsyn, his new classic, The World's Slide Towards the Second October Revolution. The author, ladies and gentlemen, is a former KGB operative, high-ranking operative, who defected in 1961. And nobody believed the story that he was telling them. The CIA didn't believe him. Nobody believed him. And old James Jesus Angleton claimed that he was a deceptive agent feeding them erroneous information. And what I think, ladies and gentlemen, I think that James Jesus Angleton was the highly placed Soviet spy in the Central Intelligence Agency that Soviet defectors had been warning us about for many years. And if you read enough about James Jesus Angleton, his extreme paranoia, or his pretended extreme paranoia of having been infiltrated in his constant investigation of CIA employees and badgering of everyone to try to find these infiltrators, and he never found any, will tend to make you believe, as I do, that it was him. He was the one all along. And when they got a KGB operative, high-ranking, who told the truth, it was James Jesus Angleton who convinced everybody that he wasn't telling the truth. Well, all you have to do is read his testimony, ladies and gentlemen. He first came to the United States in 1961. Read his book, New Lies for Old, and his new book, The Perestroika Deception, The World's Slide Towards the Second October Revolution by Anatoly Golitsyn, to see that this man was telling the truth all along, and everything that he said has come true. Everything that he said would happen to this country has come true. Everything that he wrote about has happened, ladies and gentlemen. Like me, he has one of the very highest incidents of being correct than anybody else who's ever lived. And he told us what was going to happen. He told us exactly what was going to happen. He revealed perestroika as the final phase of a master plan that calls for the overthrow of communism and the transition to new democratic power structures, which remain in reality communist-controlled. And you can check the leaders over there, and you'll see that they are. More than a decade ago, Golitsyn warned the West against the far-reaching reforms in the USSR and Eastern Europe. His 1984 book, New Lies for Old, predicted the legalization of solidarity in Poland, the democratization of Czechoslovakia, and the dismantling of the Berlin Wall. I also predicted some of those things. Now he explains the devious secret intent communists are pursuing under cover of fake reform and progress toward democracy. And if you read, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Gorbachev's book, Perestroika, he as much as admitted the whole thing in there. The whole thing. You can get this book, The Perestroika Deception, by Anatoly Golitsyn, from Barnes & Noble, catalog number E145317. That's catalog number E145317. You can order 24 hours a day with credit card by calling 1-800-THE-BOOK. That's 1-800-843-2665. I don't get anything for this, folks. I just want you to read the books. Or you can fax 1-201-767-9169. That's 1-201-767-9169. Or, like I said, you can order through 1-800-THE-BOOK. By mail to Barnes & Noble, it's One Pond Road, Rockleigh, New Jersey, Rockleigh, New Jersey, 07647. And let me see. How much is the book? I don't have the cost of the book here. Shipping and handling is $4.95. I've got that. Oh, $14.98. The book is $14.98 and include $4.95 for handling. And takes 2 to 7 days. And if you want to pay another $4.95, they'll ship it UPS second day air. And they say add tax in California, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, and Pennsylvania. You'll be amazed at what he reveals, and as you look backward, and especially if you read his earlier book, and see that it all came true. Then read his new book, and you'll see it, you'll observe it in your daily life, coming true. And I didn't defect from the Soviet Union, ladies and gentlemen, but I've been studying the Illuminati about half of my adult life. And so I know their plans, and that's why my predictions are so accurate. It's because they never deviate from what they've done in the past. This year, folks, the FCC raided Black Liberation Radio in Decatur, Illinois, and seized all the equipment. Black Liberation Radio is an unlicensed radio station operated by Napoleon and Mildred Williams, and it has been a growing thorn in the side of the local power structure. You see, they have accomplished something that I've been trying to accomplish and others in this country for a long time. They brought together the predominantly white workers who have undergone bitter strikes in the 90s, Caterpillar, etc., with unemployed blacks. And it has given them all a voice, not just locally, but to a degree nationally. Napoleon was the keynote speaker at the recent Micro Broadcasters Convention in Oakland, California. You see, they were raided, folks, not because they were doing anything unlawful, but because they were upsetting the Hegelian dialectic, which is to pit us against each other. They don't want us to get smart and stop fighting amongst each other and realize that we have one unifying common bond amongst all of us, no matter who we are, and that is freedom. And we'd better latch onto it and be willing to protect it and die, if necessary, in defense of it, or we're going to be enslaved again by these scum socialists. See, socialism sucks, ladies and gentlemen, and so do socialists. And I don't really, frankly, care who knows it. This was a pioneering station, and it must go back on the air. Napoleon needs donations, ladies and gentlemen. Napoleon needs donations so Black Liberation Radio in Decatur, Illinois, can go back on the air. They need to purchase a 40-watt transmitter to replace the 10-watt, which was stolen by the FCC. You see, there was no court order, no due process of law. The FCC has no authority to do what they did whatsoever, and that's why we say his transmitter was stolen. So please send whatever you can to Napoleon Williams in care of BLR, East Center Street, that's 637 East Center Street. Napoleon Williams, BLR, 637 East Center Street, Decatur, Illinois, 63526. That's Napoleon Williams in care of BLR, 637 East Center Street, Decatur, Illinois, 63526. In the face of the growing police state, Napoleon and Mildred are fighting back. They're uniting people instead of splitting them apart. They need your help. So please do that. What have I got here? Oh, okay. Well, let's take a little break first. I need a little break. I don't know about you, so here we go. I shall return after this brief pause.
Tarzan wasn't the latest man. He just come along from my partner is arm like that. Quick as a cat in the jungle. Oh, Clark Kent, though there was a real Kent, he would not be caught sitting around in no jungle scheme. Dumb as I need to. Solomon Grundy. Sometimes I could tell the world will never see another man like him. Hey, Bob, Sue had a straight job. Even though he could have smashed through any bank in the United States. He had the strength, but he would not. Folks dead, his family were all dead. Planet crumbled, but Superman, he forced himself to carry on. Get Krypton and keep going. Man never made any money. See the world from the Gandhi. Sometimes I could tell the world will never see another man like him. Tarzan is king of the jungle and lord over all he hates. I'd be afraid together for words. I told them Eugene. Sometimes when Soup was stopping crimes, I'll bet that he was tempted to just quit and turn his back on them. Join God there in the waters. But stayed in the city, kept on changing clothes and dirty old phone booths till his work was through. And nothing to do but go home. Superman never made any money. He knew the from Boston. Sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. Sometimes I despair the world will never see another man.
Where are you when we need you, Superman? We need you now. Oh, yes, we do need you now. Or we need somebody like you, or a lot of people like you. Just, look at history, folks. Throughout history, it takes from between one man and 5% of the population to affect any kind of action, change, restoration, revolution, whatever you want to do. Sometimes one man can do it alone. Jesus Christ was such a man. Sometimes it's five men who can do it alone. Sometimes it's just a few. The revolution that created the United States of America, the union of the several states, was brought about by less than 3.8% of all of the people in the colonies at that time. Most of you don't know that. Most of the people on these shores either were solidly on the side of King George or just flat didn't care who won, didn't take part. Now I want to give you a revelation here, written by Manly Palmer Hall from The Secret Destiny of America. Manly Palmer Hall was one of the greatest and most prolific writers of those adepts known as the Illuminati. For those of you who think the Illuminati does not exist, listen to this. Listen to this. If you think I'm crazy, this is in his own words. He writes, reverently, herein of rituals, secrecy, and the Dionysians. Speaking of rituals and the Dionysians, just wait till you see what they were up to. It's not for the squeamish, ladies and gentlemen. We'll do that on another broadcast, talk about the Dionysians and what they were up to. But Manly Palmer Hall wrote in The Secret Destiny of America that the democratic tradition is preserved by secret societies, and like V.I. Lenin, when he says democratic, he means socialist or communistic. For more than 3,000 years, secret societies have labored to create the background of knowledge necessary to the establishment of an enlightened democracy among the nations of the world. The Greek Dionysians were social and political temple builders known as the Collegians in later Rome. The rise of the Christian church brought persecution of the classical intellectual patterns ideology, driving the guilds into greater secrecy, but all have continued searching for human happiness under a variety of rituals and symbols, and they still exist as, guess what? For all of you who said that I didn't know what I was talking about when I identified them in my book years ago, here's confirmation. The Order of the Quest, end quote. Today's thinking toward a democratic world state is neither a new trend nor an accidental circumstance, another admission of conspiracy. The work of setting up the background of knowledge necessary to the establishment of enlightened democracy among all nations has been carried on for many hundreds of years by secret societies. Secret societies have existed among all peoples, savage and civilized, since the beginning of recorded history. The esoteric, which means hidden, organizations of ancient times were, for the most part, religious and philosophical. In the medieval world, they were philosophical and political. In the modern world, political and social. Secret societies have had concealment and protection as the first purpose for their existence. The members of these orders were party to some special knowledge. They usually took part in certain rites and rituals not available to non-members, but it was more important that through the societies they were also able to practice beliefs and doctrines in private for which they would have been condemned and persecuted if these rites were made public. A second purpose for secret societies was to create a mechanism for the perpetuation from generation to generation of policies, principles, or systems of learning confined to a limited group of selected and initiated persons, and I revealed how they do that in my book, Behold a Pale Horse. It's passed down from father to son and from mother to daughter. Primitive secret orders exist among African tribes, among the Eskimo, and throughout the East Indies and Northern Asia. The American Indian, the Chinese, Hindus, and Arabs have elaborate religious and fraternal organizations. In most cases, these secret orders are benevolent, and the members are bound together by obligations of mutual helpfulness and the service of the public good. Or at least, that's their propaganda. The truth is quite different. It is beyond question that the secret societies of all ages have exercised a considerable degree of political influence, usually directed against despotism, intolerance, and religious fanaticism. The order of the Dionysian artificers originated among the Greeks and Syrians at some remote time before 1500 BC. It was composed originally of skilled craftsmen banded together in a guild to perpetuate the secrets of their crafts. Gradually, the science of architecture took precedence and dominated the policies of the society. According to legend, when Solomon, king of Israel, resolved to build his temple according to the will of his father, David, he sent to Tyre and engaged the services of a cunning workman, Hiram Abiff, a master of the Dionysian artificers. The members of this society held the exclusive right throughout the Greek states in designing the temples of the gods, the houses of government, the theaters of Dionysius, and the buildings used for the public games. Now, as an aside here, this whole myth of Hiram Abiff is a total lie. He never existed. He was not in charge. It means something entirely different, which I explained to you through the symbolism or the esoteric language of the secret societies in broadcasts of the Hour of the Time, which covered the Mystery Babylon expose. I continue now with the text. It is certain that the Dionysians practiced secret rites and worshipped the gods under geometric symbolism, and that they possessed a body of lore which included mathematical secrets of proportion and design. Certain knowledge concerning universal dynamics and a philosophical, religious, moral, and political conviction concerning the perfecting of human society. And another aside, they were, ladies and gentlemen, social engineers, and they still are. They are socialists. That's what socialists do. I continue. They referred to ignorant and uncultured humans as rough ashlar, that is, an uncut stone, as it comes from the quarry, unsuited to the purpose of building. Through the refinement which resulted from self-discipline and an addiction to the divine arts, man perfected himself, becoming square, upright, and true, thus forming the true ashlar, or the cut stone which could fit with others into a pattern of masonry. In one of the code words, and this is an aside again, of identification to make yourself known as one of the adepts or the Illuminati, one of the fraternal order, the Brotherhood of Man, to all of the other adepts who may be present in an audience or in a radio listening group or on television, is when I raise my arm to the square, or to stand with your heels together at a 90-degree angle, and many others. I've revealed all of these things before, so I'm not going to go through it here again, but many of you might recognize one of those terms I just gave you and who uses it all the time. In their secret work, I'm continuing now the text, in their secret work, the Dionysians thus were social and political temple builders, and the temple upon which they labored was the living temple of the living God, quote, built of stone, made ready before it was brought thither, so that there was neither hammer nor axe, nor any tool of iron heard in the house while it was in the building, end quote. This temple was human society perfected, and each enlightened and perfected human being was a true stone for its building. There's the admission that they don't really believe in God or Jesus Christ or Buddha or anybody else. They believe that those people held offices called the Christ, and they were human teachers, and that's all. And I'm not telling you what to believe or what not to believe. I'm just telling you what these people believe. So don't get it confused with what I believe or with what you believe. Okay? It has nothing to do with it. It's what these people believe. And you have to know what they believe because they're in charge now. And whatever they believe is going to affect you in your daily life all the time. So they believe that the temple is human society perfected. Or each individual adept or member of the Brotherhood who perfects or cleanses his own body, which is the temple for the God within, the human soul. They are secular humanists, and they believe that man is God. And through the use of his intellect, he will engineer the future society, he will conquer nature and the universe, and will live Eventually, once the human genome has been mapped and conquered, we'll live forever. You beginning to understand me, ladies and gentlemen? I hope that you are. As Grecian culture reached Rome, I'm continuing with the text. I have to tell you when I break away and when I continue so you don't get my thoughts or my comments mixed up with what Manly P. Hall actually wrote. As Grecian culture reached Rome, the Latins formed their own Dionysian society and named it the Collegia. The greatest of the Collegians was an architect, Vitruvius, sometimes called the father of modern architecture, a man of vast learning. He was responsible for the superior sanitation of Rome and the great aqueducts which still border the Appian Way. While the Collegia of the Romans was less philosophical than was the Grecian society because of the different temper of the Latin people, it exercised considerable social power and perpetuated the substance of the old belief. The rise of the Christian church broke up the intellectual pattern of the classical pagan world. By persecution of this pattern's ideologies, it drove the secret societies into greater secrecy. The pagan intellectuals then reclothed their original ideas in a garment of Christian phraseology, but bestowed the keys of the symbolism only upon those duly initiated and bound to secrecy by their vows. And after many years of study, I'm the only one, the first one, and only one in the world who has ever decoded it and revealed the true meaning to the American people and to the world. That was an aside. I'm the only one who's ever done that. I continue. Part of the Dionysian movement migrated eastward to build the empire of Islam, with each stone in mosque and palace bearing the mark of the master masons. Later, the migration continued as far as India, where these same marks are to be seen on the monuments of the Mughal dynasty. In earlier development of Europe, the Dionysians became the guild of the cathedral builders. They signed each stone with the secret symbols of their cult, and into the intricate carvings of church and chapel, they worked the old pagan figures and designs. Many guilds sprang up, binding skilled craftsmen in confraternities of arts and crafts and trades. Architecture remained the chosen instrument for the perpetuation of the great design, the building of the perfect world. All the sciences contained brilliant, far-seeing men who equally desired to contribute their part to the philosophic empire of the future. Secret societies were formed in their own professions, using the emblems established in their arts to conceal their social aspirations. Thus did the alchemists come into being, the mystic chemists seeking the elixir of life, the wise man's stone, the universal medicine, and the agent for the transmutation of metals. And this is an aside, all concealing the true meaning of their religion, which was the search for the philosopher's stone, the perfection of the temple, and the transformation of the soul into God. God equals man. I continue. The elixir of life is truth itself, the preserver of all things. The wise man's stone is science that can work all wonders and solve all riddles of the mortal sphere. The universal medicine is wisdom, the only cure for ignorance, which is the universal disease. The agent for the transmutation of metals is the pattern of the universal state. Listen to this carefully. You see, they say things that sound good out of one side of their mouth, and then they tell you the truth out the other. They care not for the truth, ladies and gentlemen. The elixir of life to these people is not truth. Never has been. They are the father of lies. Listen, the agent for the transmutation of metals is the pattern of the universal state, the essence of the perfect plan for a world civilization, by which all the base elements in human society can be transmuted into the spiritual gold of right purpose. Which means, and this is an aside, total and complete control of everything and everyone. And that includes ownership. I continue. In Italy, the Illuminati sought for the pearl of great price hidden in the deep waters of mortal corruption. In Northern Europe, the Knights of the Holy Grail dedicated their lives to the search for the chalice of the Passion. Christian and Jewish Kabbalists pondered the letters of the scriptures to find the secret of the crown of splendors, and the Rosicrucians in their hidden houses used the Rose of Sharon as the symbol of brotherly love, a simple rearrangement of the letters R-O-S-E becoming E-R-O-S, the Greek god of love, Eros. All these groups belong to what is called the Order of the Quest. And this is an aside, just as I told you years ago in my book, also known as the Jason Society. Why? Because Jason was on the quest for the Golden Fleece. The Golden Fleece is the completion of the great plan, the elevation of man to, well, you know. Time is getting short. Can't afford to go off on a tangent. I continue. All were searching for one and the same thing under a variety of rituals and symbols. That one thing was a perfect social order. Plato's commonwealth, the government of the philosopher king. To this end, each consecrated its life and knowledge, exploring ever further into the secrets of nature to discover the greatest secret of all, the secret of human happiness. We are indebted to these brothers of the quest for our sciences, arts, and crafts today. They were the discoverers. They were the astronomers, scientists, physicians, mathematicians, and artists whose works we treasure, but whose dreams we have ignored. They gave knowledge to the world to make men happy. We have used their knowledge to make a few men rich. We have perverted their skill, desecrated their dreams, and profaned their mysticism. But the knowledge they have given us is available to be used in a nobler way, and someday we shall awaken to our responsibility with the realization that it is our common duty to restore the dignity of learning and dedicate it unselfishly to the human need. About the middle of the 17th century, Sir Elias Ashmole, patron of the liberal arts and founder of the Ashmolean Museum at Oxford, was initiated into the Guild of the Operative Freemasons of London, the first non-craftsman to be permitted membership. From that time on, the entire pattern of the guilds was changed, and speculative masonry came to dominate the older form of the craft, and the intellect builder became into his own. One veil of the old symbolism was lifted to reveal in full clarity that the guilds were dedicated to a program social and political. In this way, the old dream of the philosophic empire descended from the ancient world to modern time. Secret societies still exist, and regardless of the intemperance of the times, they will continue to flourish until the quest is complete. For more than 3,000 years, secret societies have labored to create the background of knowledge necessary to the establishment of an enlightened democracy among the nations of the world. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you.
All of a sudden, in the middle of the night, there's a loud knock on your door. Hey, honey. Something's not right.
Throw out your arms. Let the devil pass through. We're here for the government. We're here to help you.
And I'm from the IRS with a current attack. Did you got a complaint?
Get out of this house. Surrender your guns. Give me your gold. You better obey if you want to come home. That's what you said. And do what you're told.
Hillary Shalala, Reno Janet Dyke. Reading the words of General Albert Pike, demonic founder of the Ku Klux Klan, engineer of the Masonic Master Plan. Pike said Lucifer is God across this land. And Clinton saying, hit the mark.
This is the Voice of Freedom. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who listened to Michael Cottingham's Quest for Help, we had problems getting on the satellite last night, and so it will be rerun at his regular time tonight in its entirety. And we beg your forgiveness if this caused you any undue hardship. There was just nothing we could do. If we can't get on the satellite, we just can't do it. So, Michael Cottingham's Quest for Help, that aired late last night, will rerun tonight at the regular time. And don't forget, Sunday, beginning at noon, Mountain Standard Time, we will again have a great several hours of extra programming on the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network.
This is my daddy's station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
We now return you to our regularly scheduled programming, oldies most of the time.